Brian Hayes from TSN 1050 joins us. Brian, how you doing, my man?
Hey, boys, I'm doing well.
Now, is the sky still falling in Toronto, even though they won, because John Gibbons put in David Price?
It's such a ridiculous, typically Toronto reaction, where we have to complain and whine and come up with hot takes, even though they won the game. And yeah, to answer your question, it is. It's amazing what happened today. I mean, I just did 4 hours of my own show, and we talked about the Price decision the whole time. And every 10 or 15 minutes, I had to circle back and remind everyone they won the game. I mean, we were getting dozens and dozens of calls, people yelling and screaming. I mean, John Gibbons is a human pinata in this town anyway. Everything he does gets second-guessed, and clearly this was a very unique decision on his behalf, but it's one that has a lot of people talking, and really it's a strange distraction, because to your point, Jason, I mean, they go down to Texas, they're down 2-0, and they're coming home. I mean, they have a Game 5 tomorrow night, Stroman on the mound, the bats are alive, they have to be feeling good about themselves, yet there's this dark cloud hanging over everything, simply because of what happened yesterday with David Price.
Kind of overlooked in all of this, I thought, was how the two, you know, the Dickey and Estrada, and then even the relievers, excluding Price, did a great job of shutting down the Rangers, who have a pretty good lineup in games 3 and 4. You know, how do you think Stroman, will he approach, not that he was bad by any stretch, you know, he had the tough inning where, you know, maybe a few defensive plays behind him, and then he was really lights out against them. Are they going to approach those Ranger hitters a little differently after seeing how they shut them down in games 3 and 4?
I don't think so. I mean, I think status quo. To your point, they've got a pretty potent lineup, but the Blue Jays have pitched them very well. Really, outside of David Price in Game 1, the Jays have been borderline flawless in terms of what their arms have been able to bring to the table, because you mentioned Stroman in Game 2. That really wasn't his fault. The first inning, it was just sloppy baseball by a lot of his teammates. And once he got through that first inning, he was lights out beyond that. So I think Stroman will be very comfortable tomorrow. I think this Blue Jay pitching staff, they've obviously cultivated a game plan against these Rangers bats that have really worked out so far, and I don't see why they would change, because the Rangers, they've got a potent offense, but they really have not come alive. Now, that could scare you a little bit. You look at a guy like Prince Fielder, you know he's due. You know that if he breaks out, he can really break out. Adrian Beltre's money, he was money again yesterday. But beyond that, I mean, this pitching staff, I think, has done more than just simply get it done. They have been pretty much lights out, and I would expect the same thing tomorrow. Stroman has changed up his repertoire this year. He's throwing a lot of sinkers. He's throwing two different changeups. I mean, he's got an arsenal that has really worked for him ever since he returned to the team in early September, and I don't think there's any reason to doubt him tomorrow, and I think the arms are going to show up. And if the bats continue to hit the way they did in Game 3 and Game 4, I think you have to feel pretty good about the Blue Jays tomorrow.
Brian, the Jays were much more patient at the plate in Games 3 and 4. They weren't swinging a lot of pitches off of the plate. And you know what? Cole Hamill, he loves that, right? If you start chasing Cole Hamill, he'll dominate you all day. Now, maybe it's easier to be more patient against inferior pitchers like they had in Games 3 and 4. But, you know, what are the Jays players talking about Hamill? And from what you've seen, you know, what's the best way to get to him?
I think it's to your point. I mean, if you start chasing stuff on the paint, he will own you. That's why he's won a World Series MVP. That's why he is an absolute horse, because he knows that he can dink and doink around the strike zone. And if you go chasing, his stuff is so good, he's going to absolutely ruin you. So I think it's all about patience. That's been what they've done so well all year. I mean, they're known as a slugging team for obvious reasons. They hit a ton of home runs. They put up a ton of runs. But a lot of times they put themselves in that position because they're always in hitters' counts and because they're so patient, because they walk so much. They walk more than anyone else in the American League. And you really notice the difference between games 1 and 2 and 3 and 4, where when they were at home to open up the series, they were jittery. I thought they were chasing pitches. I thought they were trying to hit for the fences instead of letting that option come to them. And once they got to Texas, maybe it was a different scenery. Maybe it was because they were down 2-0 and they felt like, hey, they've got nothing else to lose, but they really, really got comfortable. And I think that'll be a real telltale sign of how this game plays out tomorrow, how patient they're going to be with Hamels, showing that they're not nervous or caught up with that anxiety or the energy that is going to be coursing throughout the Rogers Center tomorrow. If they play to their game plan the way they played for 162 games in the regular season, They can beat up anyone. They really can. It doesn't matter if it's Derek Holland or if it's Cole Hamels. So I think if they come in patient, if they allow Hamels to make a mistake and they pounce on it, they shouldn't have a problem with him tomorrow.
Brian Hayes, TSN 1050 in Toronto, joins us. Brian, another move that, you know, Gibbons only seems to have everybody want to crap on for the decisions they don't like, even though the team wins. No one's talking about the decision to switch Tulowitzki and Colabello in the batting order and how that paid off.
No kidding. I mean, Colabello, him going opposite field in the first, the tone was set really with Donaldson, obviously. I mean, he hit that two-run home run to really set the table, and then Colabello comes up and does the same thing later in the order. But you're so right. I mean, Tulowitzki, he walked in here. Remember, he was actually in the one hole when he first got here because Devin Travis got injured, and they had Ben Revere hitting out of the nine hole, and Tulowitzki could just never get comfortable. And really, he hasn't been comfortable at the plate since he was acquired. I think the injury factors into that to a certain extent as well. He missed so many games come mid-September. But Tulowitzki, he found his stride in Game 3. That's probably the biggest hit of the playoffs so far when he hit that home run late in that game. But the fact that you have the stones to actually make a maneuver like that, where you push Tulowitzki a little bit later into the order, move Colabello up, who has been absolutely money all year against left-handed pitchers, I think it's going to be intriguing tomorrow. I would expect the same thing will apply. I would think Colabello will hit fifth again. Tulowitzki will hit sixth. And when you have that kind of power and those kind of options, it really speaks to the embarrassment of riches this team has and John Gibbons has at his disposal when you talk about the offense. I mean, Tulowitzki hitting sixth, there might be one, maybe two other teams in all of Major League Baseball that you would ever see that be the case, and it would be the right move. And to your point, I don't think there's any doubt it was the right move yesterday.
Brian, it should be an interesting one. I know people aren't even talking about the Leafs, which is probably fair because they're going to have a tough year. But the Jays are the talk of the town, and rightfully so. Should be a huge game tomorrow. Now, do you know the protocol, Brian, on how they decide whether or not to open the dome or not? Because I can't get anybody to give me an answer on what the protocol is, why it's open or closed.
Yeah, it's a Major League Baseball decision. So the Blue Jays do not make the call. MLB makes the call because they want to take that decision out of the home team's favor. So the home team could maybe, you know, make up their decision based on how the opposition plays with the dome open, with it closed. So it's actually Rob Manfred, the commissioner, who makes the call.
Yeah, I know that.
And even dating back to 92, 93, they've just always closed it. I think out of fear that because it's an old building, that there could be a mechanical issue. I think there's probably a TV angle. They don't want to be embarrassed trying to close it, and then it doesn't close, and then they look like goons on national TV. I think that probably factors into it. But really, it's simply a gut decision as far as I've been told. There's no rhyme or reason. There's no checklist. They just make the call, and they've decided historically that they want to close, and that's going to be the case again tomorrow. It's a bummer because Game 1 was beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, it was an absolutely beautiful day. And for it to be closed at that point, it really made you wonder. It made me wonder at that point. But I don't think there's a checklist, Jason. I think they just decide almost beforehand, we're going to close it. We don't want any mechanical issues. We don't want an advantage one way or the other. So that's the way they do it.
Well, seems like a pretty fishy reason to me. But nonetheless, Bri, thanks for that. Enjoy the game.
All right, boys, you too.